Seattle is about to embark on what some might say is a grand experiment. On April 1st, Wednesday, the minimum wage in Seattle begins its climb towards $15 an hour and beyond. Seattle was the first city in the nation to pass a $15 an hour minimum wage. San Francisco has since followed suit. In a city that is notorious for its endless public process and its slow decision-making, how did $15 go from campaign slogan to law in just a matter of months? In the first of a two-part series on the minimum wage, KUOW's Deborah Wong looks back on how it all happened.
In November of 2013, Seattle elected two leaders who put $15 on the top of the city's agenda.
I, and state your name.
I, Edward Bernard Patrick Murray.
Mayor Ed Murray took the oath of office, having promised late in his campaign that if he won the race, he would raise the minimum wage in the city, possibly to 15, possibly more.
I came out during the campaign believing that we needed to do it, believing that one of the ways we have built the middle class and moved people out of poverty is by raising the minimum wage.
But months before that, a little-known economics instructor had been first to make that pledge. $15 was the signature issue of Shama Sawant's long-shot bid for city council.
There was not a single politician in the city, not a single candidate running for office, who was even talking about minimum wage, let alone the number 15.
And when both Murray and Sawant won on election day, City Hall had two newly anointed advocates for the $15 an hour minimum wage. But there were a host of other issues and events that had already conspired to put the minimum wage center stage. Seattle has a famously left-leaning and increasingly prosperous population. The state already had the highest state minimum wage in the country, but then low-wage workers began demanding more.
Organizing is a right!
Around the country in 2013, labor unions orchestrated walkouts by workers at fast food restaurants.
We need justice. We're here. We're struggling. It's just not enough what we're getting.
When the strikes came to Seattle, they were among the biggest yet. Workers made $15 an hour the rallying cry of the strikes, and they put the minimum wage in the city's spotlight.
You know, I think it took a perfect storm.
David Rolfe is president of SEIU, the Service Employees International Union Local 775, one of the main organizers of the fast food strikes.
I think what workers did by making themselves the story was they made everyone think about what it would be like to live on $9, $10, $11 an hour.
At the same time, SEIU was involved in another $15 campaign. In the city of SeaTac, the union helped put an initiative on the ballot. The measure called for raising the minimum wage for some large airport-related businesses like hotels and parking lots. It was a contentious campaign and a tight race. On election day, the initiative won, just barely, by 77 votes.
Isn't this a good evening, sisters and brothers?
That was David Rolfe. That evening, he vowed that SeaTac would be the launching place for the fight to raise the minimum wage. Meantime, in Seattle, Mayor Murray was quickly getting to work on his minimum wage promise. He formed a committee made up of 24 representatives of business, labor, and nonprofits, and gave them the task of coming up with a compromise. The group met behind closed doors. Murray says the negotiations were fraught.
They were very, very difficult. They broke down on more than one occasion. And it took a lot to get people back to the table more than once.
What do we want?
15!
What do we want?
As the committee worked, newly elected city council member Shama Sawant kept up the pressure both inside and outside City Hall.
We are not interested in a measure that is 15 in name only and has more holes than Swiss cheese.
Sawant led a small army of red-shirted activists called 15 Now, and they held the ultimate trump card. If they didn't get what they wanted from elected officials, they threatened to go straight to the ballot, just like in SeaTac, and get voters to agree on a much more aggressive minimum wage package. The SEIU's David Rolfe says the threat of a ballot fight initiated by either side motivated the committee.
Although it was sometimes unpleasant to be working under threat, the fact that we had both a deadline and consequences for missing the deadline was helpful to getting the parties to reach agreement.
The committee did come up with a compromise, a complex formula that phased in $15 over a series of years. It made big businesses raise the wage faster over 2 to 3 years, and it gave small businesses both more time and more exceptions. In early June of 2014, the agreement went to the city council for a vote.
Good afternoon. Welcome back.
The chambers were filled with cheering, chanting activists.
It's 2:01 in the afternoon. I'm Tim Burgess, the president of the council. Will the clerk please call the roll?
During the final deliberations, Shama Sawant tried to make big businesses pay $15 right away, and she badgered her colleagues for not supporting her.
It's clear why I'm fighting to end the big business phase-in, but why is it that the council is not fighting for workers like Hannah? Why is it that the council is representing the CEOs of the businesses that exploit workers like Hannah?
To which her colleague, city council member Bruce Harrell, shot back.
No one's on the side of big business. We're sellouts to big business. That's crap. That is absolutely crap.
But in the end, and after much speech-making, the bill passed, unanimously, in fact.
President Burgess.
Aye.
9 in favor, none opposed.
In signing the law the next day, Mayor Murray said he wanted Seattle's process to be a model for the nation. But not everyone was happy. Throughout the process, small businesses, and restaurants in particular, argued that the 60% wage hike could bankrupt their businesses. David Meinert is a nightclub and restaurant owner who was on the mayor's minimum wage committee. He says many of the city's businesses felt bullied by the process, but were forced to support the agreement because of what he calls political blackmail.
But I'm disappointed the way the process worked, and I'm disappointed in the other side personally attacking people. I felt like there's a lot of people on the left that should have been working together, and instead it got super negative.
Meinert says one casualty of the process was his relationship with SEIU's David Rolfe. He says the two were friends, but haven't spoken since. David Rolfe says he also has some regrets. He says in retrospect, given how things turned out, he wonders if minimum wage activists should have asked for even more. I'm Deborah Wong, KUOW News.